are listening to Conversations with Nathan Latka, where I sit down and interview the top SaaS founders, like Eric Yuan from Zoom. If you'd like to subscribe, go to getlatka.com. We've published thousands of these interviews, and if you want to sort through them quickly by revenue or churn, CAC, valuation, or other metrics, the easiest way to do that is to go to getlatka.com and use our filtering tool. It's like a big Excel sheet for all of these podcast interviews. Check it out right now at getlatka.com. Guys, VisiPay.com is the POS system that rural small businesses are using. They are powered by Clover. He just spent $1 million buying additional Clover hardware to get installed. He's got over 13,000 signed customers, tens of thousands installed POS systems. They did $1.85 billion in transaction volume last year, representing 35 million transactions. They did about, call it 22, 23 million bucks of total, about 22 million bucks of total revenue, hoping to hit, call it 25 million this year. He's got 95 full-time folks on the team, and his go-to-market is a very unique combination of 1099 contractors that can keep and build 50% residual revenue streams for selling the VisiPay product in their local communities. And also, he's now, the big bet they're making is how can they get W-2 full-time employees performing in a unit economic positive way. He uses local bank to fund $1.5 billion of debt to keep growing the business because he has bootstrapped the entire thing. Imagine owning 100% or close to 100% of a 25 million business. Austin has done it. He's staying patient, building it the right way. Hey folks, my guest today is Austin McNabb. He's a CEO and founder of VisiPay. They're a prominent provider of payment technology solutions for rural small businesses all across the US. He's got over 19 years of experience doing this, and he's an expert in the payment processing, bank card, and retail industries. In 2017, he launched the company with the goal of disrupting the status quo of the payment space to help small businesses level up their operations and save money on processing fees. Austin, you ready to take us to the top?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's roll.
Your team went out of their way in your bio to specifically say, quote, rural small businesses. Is that? Is this a key differentiator between you and Stripe, say, or Square, sorry?
Yeah, I mean, that's been kind of our differentiator since we started. And that's, I think, helped us excel to the next level, being bootstrapped from the beginning till today, is we are focused strictly on, you know, rural American communities, which we believe technology is passing them by, specifically in the payment space. You know, big companies, you can probably name them, you know, a couple of them that are on the stock market or not, that their focus has to be in bigger cities where there's more transactions, bigger population, more payment processing, because they naturally have people to answer to a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that also leaves a lot of rural American businesses behind technology when it comes down to making their business more efficient, that's fair priced, that is simplistic, not complicated. And that allows them to kind of go from that, I always say, go from that flip phone stage back in the good old days to let's get into a smartphone, right? But within the payment space kind of concept. So mm-hmm. we really go into smaller communities and that's where we have a lot of our boots on the ground across the United States.
So guys, as you know, what I love featuring on this show are founders that are quietly crushing it, especially when they have big VC-backed funded competitors. And what I love about Austin, just to summarize, when he came on in February of 2023, we're recording this episode Wednesday, March 13th, 2024, but he launched the business in 2017, did about $100,000 of revenue that year. By 2021, 12 million. 2022, 18 million. So about flat, not flat, 6 million in extra revenue there. And then 2023, I can't remember, Austin, if this is what you told me you were going to do or it's what you closed with, but you said, I think 25 to 27. Is that sort of where you came in last year?
So from 2022 to 2023, our growth is about 19%. So we went from 18 million to about 21.5 million of revenue.
Yep.
This year, we're anticipating to do around 26 and a half is kind of our revenue projections and goals, is another about 23% increase we're looking to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we did jump from, you know, that 19% from 22 to 23, and which is a big deal for us just because we don't have that VC backing. We don't have that PE backing. And when, instead of declining, we actually increased by a good amount. So,
yeah. Well, look, I always appreciate how transparent and vulnerable you are. So I want to dig into this because a lot of founders in your position go through this. I do remember you said last year in February when I interviewed, your target for 2023 was 27 million. You still grew, which is fantastic, especially considering your capital structure, your bootstrap, but you only grew to 21.5 million instead of 27 million. Look, in my head, who cares? You still grew and your economics are still good. But how do you manage sort of that with your team at the end of the year? Hey guys, we wanted to do 27. Good job. We got to 21.5. Here's what we want to do next year. How do you sort of manage that gap?
That's a great question. And that's a question, you know, we've talked about a million times over, just because naturally you're like, well, shoot, we fell short, right? Now, I think the biggest thing about, you know, starting a startup and building it the way we've built it through Bootstrap is, you know, we got to find a lot of positive and sometimes negative situations. And one would say that, hey, gosh, you know, we missed the mark by a huge amount, man. You all suck. We all suck, man. Let's close the business down, right? Or it's not going to work out. We got to fire everyone, right? But that wasn't the case. The case was we grew by 19%. We went from 18 to 21 and a half. And all we had to do was say, all right, well, why was there a gap? Where did we fail, but not really fail, but we can learn from so we can make 2024 a better year to get closer to the goals we want to reach, right? So we had to look back, and we had to look back at the mistakes we made because we're not perfect. I think when you're starting a company from scratch, no matter which way you look at it, you don't have a bunch of big wigs that can call you up and get advice from. You got to figure out yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. And with our company, you know, one of the biggest things we've done to kind of, you know, start our organization is when I started, I have, you know, almost 20 years of experience now. But the nearest person next to me at an organization is at 7 years, which is as long as we've been around, because we hired about 95% of our staff that have no industry experience whatsoever out of almost 100 employees. So naturally, the creative ideas sometimes don't work. You're going to fail quick. We're going to have to pivot. And last year, we learned a lot about, you know, that we launched a W-2 model over the last 24 months, you know, 22, 23. We learn our gaps. We learn where we made mistakes, what we need to double down on, you know, what we need not to do, which maybe we don't need to hire as many people, but we need to double down on the very people we have today, incentivize them, get them to the next level. Instead of worrying about bodies, and we were worrying about the bodies that are currently here and leveling them up. And I know that was part of the reason why we probably didn't hit our revenue numbers, because we were getting our face slapped without knowing it until we looked at the numbers at the end of the year, because, you know, we were still growing. So it's like, hey, high-fiving still, right? Yep. But nowhere near where we wanted to be. And I think we just had to learn from the mistakes and some of the failures. And I think that's what we did. And that's why 2024 is exciting.
So those of you listening now, a couple minutes in this interview, going, wait, what is VisiPay? I don't know what it is yet, because maybe you missed the first interview. His first customer was an auto repair shop. Today, he's serving folks like restaurants, rural coffee shops, rural mom and pop businesses. It's not just software, right? He's got to deal with the upfront cost of the actual hardware, of which he's got 10,000 clients that keep 2 to 3 POSs sort of per client location. So that's tens of thousands of pieces of hardware there. And in addition, Austin then makes money after that on a per transaction model. He's processing at least about a year ago, over 1 million transactions per month, and then takes 1.8 to 2.5% of interchange there, as well as the revenue model. So when you go back and look, Austin, and please correct me if any of that is wrong after I ask this question, when you go back and look at what assumption sales you put in your forecast model beginning of last year, which assumptions were wrong? Was it really just people-based, like you just said, or were you projecting 50,000 installed POSs and you only hit 10,000?
I think it was a mixture of both, right? And, you know, every year that's gone by, we've been able to be more and more granular with our projections, right? And what I mean by that is, I think that sometimes you look at a kind of a high level, broad number, like let's say, hey, no, you know, no, a number of, you know, what's revenue divided by number of accounts, and that's, you know, that's kind of what it is. But in reality, that's not what it is when it comes down to what we make, right? So what we had to look back at and say, well, we missed it by the mark of assuming how many sales we're going to get. And when it comes down to number of bodies we have, and we overextended, and this is something that, hey, I'm not afraid to admit it, we overextended the number of bodies we should have hired, which ate right into not only, you know, our you know, losses, but it also took a lot of time and like really good time of our good people here to get the people that were really doing well and doubling down and get them to, you know, double their sales, right? Mm-hmm. And that,
what
that
is that? Can you quantify? I mean, every founder goes through this, right? It's like, okay, we're bringing on a new AE. What should their quota target be? That's number one. Number two is, how long does it take them to ramp? And sometimes most founders are too aggressive with those. Well, they think it's going to ramp, it's going to take 6 months. It actually takes 12. They think one sales rep can hit $1 million quota. They can only hit $500K quota, right? Were there, like, what were the bottlenecks for you where the Excel model didn't pan out how you thought it would?
It came down to like how we look. So we have a couple different ways of actually getting sales, right? So we have inside sales, which is in-house, that focuses on, you know, marketing efforts to get people to call us throughout these communities. And we have a 1099 channel that are boots on the ground, that are independent contractors that can work anywhere. And then we have a W-2 model, right? And the W-2 model is what we invested in for the last couple of years, 2022 to 2023. And how we look at that is, The W-2 model is more of a controllable thing because there's a lot of great individuals that don't want to be an independent contractor and be that entrepreneur.
Just be clear,
right?
When you say W-2 model, so, you're talking about you're hiring full-time employees. They're not contractors.
Yeah, full-time employee, salary, the whole works. 1099 is no salary. It's just purely commission, right? So how we looked at those individuals is we have to look about what revenue are they bringing in and giving them time to ramp up, right? Because if they're new in the business, it takes about 60 days. We give almost like 2 free months, right, of ramp up. And as long as they're doing basic actions that we need to see to, you know, number of leads hit and proposals and stuff like that, we kind of know. And then we start looking at, well, how much revenue are they bringing in per month comparative to their salary? And are they able to pay themselves off? So what we found out was it takes about 6 to 8 months for an ROI on a W-2 employee to make the money back when it comes down to what we're paying them salary-wise, plus, you know, commissions, whatever, that's kind of separated. Mm-hmm. But what we weren't doing was we were giving too much time to people at one point in time, and we weren't putting enough time in the people that actually were hitting stride, right? So then we realized, well, we need to, I hate to say it, cut quicker and double down more on the people that are seeing traction, because this is a new business for a lot of people that are coming into it, right? So when we fell short on some of those goals last year, it was because I think we overlooked the fact of the matter. You know, we thought more bodies equated to more sales. When that's fucking not true. Excuse my language. That's not true, right? So, and we realized that we can't think that way anymore. So this year, what we've done this year is night and day difference is we said we're not going to go on a hiring spree. We're not going to go try to hire 30 people.
What's full-time today? How many people full-time?
Full-time, we have right now 95. Total.
Okay. And how many do you think you'll people. Hire full-time by the end of the year? Like how conservative is your estimate there?
This year, our goal is to hire no more than like 2 people. Like,
that's great.
Our goal is not to hire a bunch of people this year. This is actually going to be the first year we're trying to actually go in the positive, not stay in the negative, right? You know, we're trying to kind of focus and leverage ourselves to be in a better position going into 2020, you know, five.
You mean positive, negative so in terms of cash flow or EBITDA?
Cash flow, EBITDA, you know, positive revenue, not loss in the P&L, right?
And well, but you're bootstrapped though, Austin, right? How do you fund losses if you're bootstrapped?
How we fund you know losses throughout the year is either we put more money in, you know, that we maybe had from my previous career.
Okay, so like you personally, will you put money in yourself?
You could, yeah. Or believe it or not, there's ways out there to leverage your current company's valuation or your cash flow, your growth trajectory. And you can partner, like we partner with a local bank that is a community bank, and we showcase to them, hey, instead of taking PE money and getting and losing equity, let's go in debt instead a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So we took a little debt to actually allow us to fund some of that in those gaps, which has helped us out substantially. And when I say debt, I don't mean let's go out and let's get $100 million in debt. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about getting enough money to bridge gaps that we knew that were going to happen, which we did have to have happen. And then this year-
So how much was that? You're talking like $1 million from the bank or 500K or something?
Last year was 1.5 million that we worked with the bank on. And we worked with them based on our projections and based on our current revenue growth, et cetera. And they bought into, you know, our vision, right?
Austin, how do you do that? I talk to so many founders that are software that they are so fed up trying to do anything with their local bank because the local bank won't loan against a software company. Did you have to use the hardware POS systems as collateral to put up against that $1.5 million loan to get the bank to understand how to underwrite you?
Well, it sucked to be honest with you because there's a lot of education part, right? We went to a community, like literally it's a community bank, right?
Yeah.
They have no clue what we're doing, right? So we had to sit down with them and with their board, the whole works, and say, hey, this is who we are as an organization. This is what we're doing. This is what we're focused on. This is where we gain our revenue through residual base, through hardware, through, you know, long-term relationships with clients in these communities. And this is our, you know, I think proofs in the pudding is important. Like, we knew the year one and year two, year three, like there's no way a bank would even look at us twice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But when you're talking about bigger revenue numbers of 10 million, 15 million, well, they tend to look at you because there's two hopes, right? They're going to make money on the interest and high five if you make it. They're going to want you to be one of their clients, right? So we had to basically showcase to the bank that, you know, our residual growth based on processing volume is increasing, not decreasing. And this is what we get from it. And they eventually understood it. And then once they did that, they got an appetite. And don't get me wrong, they didn't write a fat check for 1.5 million and say, go get them, Tiger, right? They said, well, what are you going to spend it on? And then they released it slowly based on need. and throughout the year, right? Because they're gonna very, very conservative naturally.
Did you have to sign a personal guarantee?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you personally did. Got it. That's what makes them comfortable, right? Is you personally guaranteed it. They're looking at your own personal finances, and plus they love the business structure. So you're able to, and bank debt, by the way, I mean, you know, obviously I'm in this space, right? Most people can't do what you've done because they're not at 20 million of revenue and they're maybe personally not wealthy. But if you can do this, you're getting this bank debt probably at like prime or SOFR plus like 2 or 3. It's very cheap money. It's relatively cheap money.
Oh yeah. And that's better than giving up equity, right? So, so we did that and we have a X amount of year payback and we're very comfortable with the pay plan. And we knew that we could turn that money into a lot more. And yeah, we did. You know, in my mind, we turned 1.5 million into, I mean, much more than 1.5 million over the next 3 years. Because
I mean, Austin, just run the numbers. You grow from 18.5 to 21.5, yeah, right? So you're adding $3 million ARR. If you one day sell for 10x ARR, you added $30 million of equity value for 1.5.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like this is pure arbitrage.
Yeah, no brainer, in my opinion, if you can get to that point and doing it. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't like the first bank we talked to said, hey, let's do it, right? I mean, it took some time and effort to play the numbers game. You know what I mean? And then we finally found a bank that, you know, believed in us and believed in our
vision. Did you have to move all of your deposits, your business operating account to the bank that eventually did the loan?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things they want is to see those deposits flowing in because that's how the bank is, you know, they consider themselves successful. I mean, the very person that helped us is now our CFO. It's kind of crazy how that works.
Oh, wow.
So small world, right? So now the very person that understood everything about us is now currently today our CFO. So now he understands everything in and out and it made it a lot easier. And guess what I didn't have to do? I didn't have to hire someone from our payment space. And again, the reason why I never did that because I've been around so long that just is a lot of bad habits and I didn't want people, not saying that we would never hire experienced people. Just imagine having 95 experienced people at 20 years plus. We all have we might have the same mindset and stuff like that. We wanted to avoid that. So I'm glad we got it.
Yeah. Has anything changed moving forward about your revenue model? Do you still charge about 58 cents per transaction?
I mean, nothing's changed about our revenue model compared to last year. It just now it comes down to what we're focused on. And I think we briefly talked about it last year is we're focused on putting, so there's two types of terminals out there. There's the small ones. We call them standalone terminals. You walk into a store, they have a little machine, you swipe through, that's standalone. POS systems like a Clover, you probably heard of Clover, is the white system. It's like a POS system. So going into this year, you know, we basically put almost $1 million into equipment because we saw it work last year.
On Clover or standalone?
On Clover. Literally, I moved out of my office. I wish you could see it. I'm not sure if you've seen it online, but I moved out of my office because we had to use that as a storage room for that $1 million worth of equipment.
And that was all Clover. Clover POS system is just stacked up there right now.
Stacked up there. I'll send you a picture later. It's hilarious. You know, we did that, you know, late last year. And what our goal was, we realized that people that have POS systems that are is easy to use, simplistic, and they have more options, they tend to stay around longer and they do more volume, even in rural America. You know, believe it or not, there's people that do good volume in rural America and they stay around longer because they're able to run their business in a different way than they ever have. So they're stickier and also they do a little bit more volume, which helps our cause of, you know, we make money on the processing volume. You know, last year we did 1.85 billion, 35 million transactions. This year, you know, our goal is based on projections is around 2.25 billion and over 30 million, you know, well over $1 million increase per month. And that's what we're looking to do this year. And we only can do that if we're setting ourselves up for that, which is why we invested into more hardware POS systems.
So you think this year, you finished last year with 1.5 billion of total transactions flowing through VisiPay powered POS systems, whether standalone or through a partner terminal like Clover, and that equated to 38 million total transactions. Is that right?
1.85 billion last year, 2023, and 35 million transactions.
I see.
So this year we're trying to get up to, you know, 2.25 billion, which adds roughly around $30 million per month in processing volume. And in our business, I think that's unheard of being where we started to where we're at today with no outside money. You know,
I mean, that also you told me last time that the average credit card swipe at the auto shop that your Clover system is installed in is the average swipe is $25 to $30, right? So if you're trying to add that much processing volume, you're trying to get about 1 million more credit card swipes across all of your installed customer base per month. I mean, that's a lot of growth.
Yeah, and I think right now, based on, you know, right now we have seen since November of last year, we've seen our sales steadily go up, even through the holidays. We naturally, the first month, the first couple months of any year for us personally in the payment space is slower because wintertime and, you know, summertime stuff is, you know, basically slowed down during those winter times across the United States, especially in the Midwest where a lot of our business is. But now we're seeing a huge pickup, which we always do every single year, which is during spring, summer when marinas are opening up and all these, you know, places, spring break, all these things starts increasing. So what happens every single year in our business is we'll have a low point, which is usually around January, February. We'll peak around August. We'll maintain that peak even if summer business is closed because we've added so many new businesses deals in, and we'll maintain that through the next peak the following year. And that's been that way since the dawn of time.
I
That's
see.
what it feels like. And even with my last company.
Yeah. All right. Hey, as we wrap up, let me just make sure I got this breakdown right. So you've got 95 full-time employees. How many 1099s today?
1099s, we have over 125 active 1099s across the United States, and we have probably close to 500 in training. That's a continual number, meaning they never got their first deal, but they're giving an opportunity to us to teach them the products and services to sell to their communities. And we try to get them to, you know, obviously buy into that too on a
What's the
1099 level.
kickback on that? Is it 10% of first year revenue, or how do you structure that incentive?
Well, 1099s are different than W-2s, right? So, you know, 1099s, when they first get into business, we usually share 50%, you know, of a break-even mark that we set with them. So they can build a residual base for them and their
Per
family while
month
we're
or per
making
year or
commissions
ongoing forever?
for every account. And we do what we call lifetime residuals too. So as long as those accounts are active with us, we are able to continue paying them residuals. So you could actually sign up three deals a day, I don't know, make $500 a month, and we'll pay you that even if you don't get another one again,
I see.
the profit. So we actually split that to get independent contractors, not they buying in for the residual portion long term, not just the upfront money we're giving them to get the
100%.
deal.
Does that, how much money are you paying each month in the 50% commissions out to the 125 active 1099s?
When it comes down to like what we're residual based, what we're paying out to those guys.
Exactly, per month, based off all the deals they brought you.
Last month alone, we paid well close to $1 million in residuals out to W-2s and 1099s.
Yep,
You know,
yep, yep.
so we're paying a good chunk of money to individuals out there because, you know, hey, look, when we first started, 1099 contractors were the easiest because if they fail or didn't want to go work or didn't do anything, we had to spend no money, right? These
Yep.
are 1099s and contractors. Now, obviously, that catches up to you when they actually start hitting stride and they start building residual base. W-2 is opposite. We have to front load all the money in
Yep.
hopes they make it. So, but we also know that that's a better opportunity for us long term because, you know, those are individuals that we can keep more profit long term as well.
Yeah, it's a yin and a yang. I mean, if you're doing about a 24 million run rate today, 2 million a month, and your cost structure is sending 1 million out to the 1099s and W-2s, a portion of which is fixed, a portion of which is variable, which is less risk, it still means though your cost of goods sold, right? Your margin here is, 50% in the best case scenario right now monthly. So I guess, do you see any, I guess, are you just sort of okay with that? You have to make the business work with 50% margins, or do you see a way to buy back some of that margin over time by buying out like the perpetuity, payment stream on some of the 1099s or something?
So the current market for us, revenue stream out in total, when it comes down to net, is about 43%, by the way, just so
I
you know.
see.
So it's about 43 because when you incorporate everything, there's deductions, there's
Okay.
clawbacks because, you know, accounts cancel, whatever it may be. It's about 43%. By the way, that has been lowered from 52% 3 years ago down to 43%.
Okay.
And
Just to
because
be
some of
clear,
those plans,
43% cost structure, 43% is cost, or 57% is your gross margin?
so it's 50% is our end. You know, we make on
57% is
our
what you
ends.
keep, gross profit.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
Yep,
and
yep,
we've down we would push that number down. We pay basically about 43% out in residuals based on what we get paid through that revenue stream, and our goal is to lower that number to 40% or less over time. And you can do
Mm-hmm.
that in a lot of different ways. W-2s help with that cause, right? You can also do it by buying out independent contractors' book of business for some X multiples,
What would
and
that
then they can go
be?
buy houses.
What would that
It
be?
depends on situation. Well, it depends on situation, right? It depends on how healthy their book is. I've seen as high as 25 multiple, and I've seen as low as 7 multiple.
Of
You know, so think
monthly.
about a monthly residuals. So,
Yeah.
you know, I've seen literally the highest I've seen in my career is about 35, and the lowest I've seen in my career is 5, depending on how healthy their book is. And that's how we look at those independent contractors. So they basically are building their own credit line for long term. So,
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
you could buy out it. Yeah. So that's something that we could do, and that also puts that money right back in our pocket. as
I was going to
well.
say, Austin, that's what I'm saying is if you prepare yourself to go into an M&A process, which, you know, I have no inside information, but if you did and you want to increase your margins, what you could say is we're paying $1 million out per month right now to these contractors. Let's go offer them all 7x of that. See how many will take it. So you need to raise $7 million to go buy back 43% to your margin, basically.
Yep.
And that margin improvement, you're going to get more equity gains probably than the $7 million cost to buy that back anyway. So that's an arbitrage. That's a play you could make down the road potentially. Is that right?
100%. And this business is known to do that a lot, you know, of the time. And we know that that is a line item that we can utilize if we ever want to go down that bridge and make that a focus. And we could do that hopefully maybe by ourselves without doing that down the road. Who knows? So.
Yeah. Well, if you need $7 million, we would love to fund that one day at FounderJack.
fair enough.
Awesome. This is good stuff. Let's wrap up here with the thing. Actually, before we wrap up, I didn't give you any time to really talk about future product. Is there any future product releases that you're really excited about? You want to make sure you get some exposure here on the show?
You know, there's a couple things we're doing. So, you know, Clover is something we decided to partner with. Instead of spending the millions upon millions that they have spent over the years to become the dominant, you know, software they are, we decided to partner with them because we're with Fiserv. Fiserv happens to own Clover. And we are building now applications. Kind of like, think about your iPhone. You can download apps, you pay money for us, these whole works. Well, Clover does the same thing. So we are building out applications on the Clover device that not only can be used if you process with us, but could be also be used if you don't process with us for the programs that we focus on, which is cash discount and dual pricing and you know, inventory management, the whole works. So we're building those apps for our fintech team. So now we can be exposed not only just to clients that are processing with us, but we can also be exposed to clients that are not processing with us too for another line item of SaaS fees, because, you know, we would charge monthly for those apps, right? So we have done that. I think that's something that's key. And then, you know, one other thing that's key is tying our whole business. So managing, you know, sales reps, W-2, 1099 clients, all works into a CRM that we've, you know, have been building for many years. And really allowing us to, you know, manage our organization outside third-party management systems that don't know what we do and how we talk to our, you know, our team and how we manage our overall sales force. So I think that's something that's interesting too. So those two things, I would say, are the biggest things we're working on.
Well, we'll watch closely. We're excited for this. If you hit on everything you're hoping to hit on this year, what do you think you'll finish this year revenue-wise? What revenue will you finish the year with, you think?
So there's the company goal.
Give me the conservative.
Everyone knows what the goal is. The conservative goal is $25 million.
Okay, got it.
The Austin McNabb, you know, let's blow my socks out of the water goal is 26.5. So
that's awesome. And how many customers do you have today?
Today we're a little. We've signed over 13,000+ clients. This year we're trying to add over 4,500 clients to our book of business. Through all our channels, sales channels. So
that's awesome. All right. Well, we're rooting for you. Let's wrap up here with the famous five. Number one, your favorite business book.
You asked me this last time. I always tell people I don't have a business book. Yeah. David Goggins, I think Can't Hurt Me was a great last book I've, you know, listened to and or whatnot, but I always say my favorite book is the one I'm writing every single day.
So. There you go. I love that. Number two, is there a founder you're following or studying?
I don't really probably follow a lot of founders. I think Mark Cuban stands out to me. I think I like that guy a lot, but I don't really follow many.
Number three, what's your favorite online tool for building VisiPay?
Favorite online tool for building VisiPay?
Yep.
I can go on all day. We use Microsoft Teams. And
what
Microsoft
call tracking? What call tracking solution do you use? You do a lot of calling.
Yeah. Zendesk is actually what we've started our company on, and we have built our company on through a ticketing system for clients and agents. So I would say Zendesk is a great option that you can API into as well. So
number four, how many hours of sleep do you get every night?
I get to sleep probably around 11:30, 12, and I wake up at 6 every morning. So all I would say 5-6 hours a night tops.
That's good. Still married, 3 kids?
Married. We just celebrated our 21st anniversary, and 3 kids, 18. 15 and 13, and my 18-year-old is graduating high school shortly, and he's going to be our next company apprentice April 1st. So it's pretty exciting.
Wow, I think you had a birthday, right? So you're 39, is that right?
Yeah, December 9th was my birthday. So 39, I turned 40 this year. Yep.
So 21 year. So you met your wife, I guess, then when you were what, like 18?
Yeah. We were young. We started young.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. Last question. Something you wish you knew when you were 20.
how hard life really is as an adult when you have bills, probably. I wish I would have known that a little more. Yeah, I would say that probably.
Guys, VisiPay.com is the POS system that rural small businesses are using. They are powered by Clover. He just spent $1 million buying additional Clover hardware to get installed. He's got over 13,000 signed customers, tens of thousand installed POS systems. They did $1.85 billion in transaction volume last year, representing 35 million transactions. They did about, call it 22, 23 million bucks. Of total, sorry, 22, yeah, about 22 million bucks of total revenue, hoping to hit, call it 25 million this year. He's got 95 full-time folks on the team, and his go-to-market is a very unique combination of 1099 contractors that can keep and build 50% residual revenue streams for selling the VisiPay product in their local communities. And also, he's now, the big bet they're making is how can they get W-2 full-time employees performing in a unit economic positive way. He uses local bank to fund $1.5 billion of debt to keep growing the business because he has bootstrapped the entire thing. Imagine owning 100% or close to 100% of a 25 million business. Austin has done it. He's staying patient, building it the right way. Austin, thank you for taking us to the top.
Thanks for having me, Nathan. I appreciate it, buddy.